Early May, just as hate knows love's the cure, you can rest your mind assured that I'll be loving you always.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I'm Susanna Mars. Today we're going to dive into another messy topic. It seems everything's pretty messy right now, which is good. It's all good.
Yeah.
I'm introducing Monica Fleetwood, Ayana Berkshire, Tahera Cozier, and James Dixon. Monica and Tahera are both from Side-Eyed Collaborations, a newer arts organization in town. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Side-Eyed is doing and why you formed in the first place, and we can jump into the conversation about equity, diversity, and inclusion for 2018 and our dreams for it after that.
Yay!
Yay.
Small cheer.
Big cheer. Hello. So, Side-Eyed Collaborations, I guess it's best to start with our mission, right?
Yeah, this is a free, like, we can speak freely, right? This is just like,
Go for it.
We're about speaking freely.
Yeah, okay, we just want to make sure. Okay.
And perfectly imperfectness. So,
yes. Like, messy, it's my thing right now.
Okay, so our mission, just to be super corporate about it, is the, we like to illuminate the marginalized lens through theatrical performance and visual art to inspire conversation and action. So basically, we are trying to focus and talk on the things that we don't see a lot now in Portland, as well as on TV, in television. We focus on right now, which you'll see a lot this year, 2018, is the Black woman's perspective, the Black woman's life, and the Black woman's voice. What we hope to show in the future is all different types of things, like LGBTQ, like maybe immigration and refugee crisis and stuff like that. Things that are gritty but real life and beautiful within their gritty and real lifeness, that people are shying away from. And just like not doing.
Yeah, she summed it up. this is like the story I like to tell because it's what's moved me, because Ty and I used to be roommates. So it's like what made me knock on her door and be like, Ty, enough is enough. We have to do this. So, audition season came around, and this is our first audition season. We were at PAC, we're alumni, and we were
That's
super
Portland Actors Portland Conservatory Actors for Conservatory. Those of you who don't
yes.
know the acronym.
No. There's a lot of us in town. And we were super excited about the season. We're like, man, we just got out some really good shows, worked some really good directors in town, and so we were like ready to hit the ground running. And as all the auditions start coming out, of course you filter through and you're like, oh, I can't do this one because clearly they need that person, or I can't do this one.
Do you mean clearly they need that person who's not
casting?
Person
of color.
Based on color.
Yeah,
okay.
Based on color.
Yeah.
And as we finally got an audition notice to a theater, and I was excited because I was like, oh, this is one of the premier theaters. Let's freaking do this. I'm ready. And as I walk into the room, I have never seen so many Black women in all of Portland. When I walk into this room, I mean, I'm like, wow, like there's a lot of Black women here. Like, where are you from? Where'd you go? How long have you been here? And it was so great. And then as I'm thinking and I'm taking it in, I'm realizing what we're auditioning for. And we're auditioning to be, quite frankly, slaves. Mm. And then as I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, there's all these beautiful, multi-talented Black women in here. And yet we're auditioning for slaves, which I think I mean, there's a saying that goes around that you either got to play a slave, a prostitute, or a crackhead within the Black woman community to go ahead and get that jump start. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all well
enough. Or a maid.
Or a maid.
So it's four.
Yes. And I think there have been plenty of women, Black women especially, who've put that forth and put that forth and put that forth. And yet it's 2017 and we're still putting that narrative forth. No matter what the actual story entails, it could actually be something relevant. The point is that we haven't yet stopped focusing on this one particular thing that is no longer or is still an experience that the Black women are trying to move away from. And I have this one saying that is dear to me: just because you put minority bodies on stage does not mean you're telling a story. Not mean you're telling a minority story. Mm-hmm. Placing bodies on stage does not mean you've sat here and you've done us justice, because you've kind of filled a checklist of like, this is a person, this is a person. And when do we start? And when do we start moving from, we only tell one secular story at a time? So we'll have like a Black experience story, we'll have like an Asian experience story, we'll have like an LGBTQT. It's, you know, like, when do we stop taking just one thing and saying, this is a story we're gonna tell this moment? And when do we start making it multiracial? Because the reality is, when we walk in the world, it's layers on layers on layers on layers on layers of interaction that we have. And I don't see that playing out in theater. And that's what made Side-Eye be like, it's time to move forward. Like, we're tired of just having women in the room, specifically Black women in the room, still playing these roles that, like, Gone with the Wind, that Miss Hayden, you know, it's like, we got to move forward now, guys. There's other things to be told than that story. Mm-hmm. So that's...
On top of the fact that, like, us 20-somethings in this community are angsty, we're, like, all of us are itching. Like, it's every company or every formed little group or independent whatever are all itching. I mean, and it's the problem of, like, the newcomers here, where it's, like, just to put it frank, it's, like, everybody who gets cast in these big shows have been around longer and they age everybody up. You know what I mean? So it's, like, you got a role that's 20-something and, you know, our 40-something-year-old counterpart is getting this role because they've been here longer, they're more experienced, they work with the director, so on and so forth, which is fine. It's cool. That's how you play the game. So let's just form our own stuff and do what we want to do. Like, mm-hmm. just to be, you know, as...
frank.
Yeah, about it.
Hmm. So that leaps, of course, really nicely into the question, you know, what are we really hoping for our city in 2018 in terms of equity, diversity, and inclusion? There's so much to it. I mean, what I've been thinking about a lot lately is leadership and, of course, boards that are made up of non-diverse groups of people. How do we start to build the leadership that reflects the kind of community that we want to live in?
Well, I think it requires a collective push to want to do that. Like, these organizations have to want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, Portland Center Stage, their artistic director is leaving. Their board gets to choose
mm-hmm.
who's going in that position. And I'm curious to know who that is, who that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you really want change, you have to think about change from the top all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be about diversity and equity. Oh, we're going to put, you know, people of color on stage and we're not worried about the artistic team, anything like that. It takes a collective energy to do that. And I think a lot of people get really defensive when you say, well, you know, well, we're doing the show with Black people and we've got, it's like, no, but why are white men telling Black women stories? Why can't Black women tell their own stories? Why can't queer people tell their own stories? Mm-hmm. Why aren't we putting these people in the room? And like you said, people are really hungry for that, really hungry to really get involved in that. And it's not just about race. I mean, it's about ageism. It's about mm-hmm. gender. It's about, I mean, I'm Black, but I'm also queer. Like, a lot of times I have to think about, you know, how butch am I going to be in this role? Like, can mm-hmm. I actually kiss a woman? Absolutely. I think women are great, you know, like... Mm-hmm. But regardless of that, these are barriers that we have to go through as actors and as arts administrators as well. So
it's kind of interesting because this morning, you know, the Time Person of the Year was announced and it's hashtag Me Too. And I thought, you know, it's about personal empowerment, no matter who you are. And I also hope that the fact that we do have a major new artistic director coming into our city at some point in 2018, that people will realize that we have the power to write and to be in communication with the powers that be at any organization in our city to express our desires.
Just to jump on that, it's not just hashtag Me Too, it's the Silence Breakers.
Ah, oh, thank you.
And I think that's a really important distinction because there is so much that continues to go unsaid, or it's again this history and this perpetuation of silence because of whatever it is. It's institutionalized. Mm-hmm. It's become a social norm. And so, you know, we don't speak about it, or we speak in small circles, or we mm-hmm. don't feel empowered to make change. And, you know, looking at Portland Center Stage and their board making the decision for their new artistic director, their board for the most part is unknown. They mm-hmm. keep it that way, that mm-hmm. it's private. So how do we state, you know, what we feel is important for this city and put our request out? You know, is that through using the media? Is that through our, you know, how do we organize and make that known? Mm-hmm. And I think that goes across the board, yeah. across the board.
And more yeah. importantly, who's gonna, is everyone being receptive right. to what we're asking for? Right. Will they even hear what we have to say, you know?
Mm-hmm. Does it come down to the audience and, you know, what they're demanding? Because
that's my theory. A lot of what Ty and I focus on is the specific pool of people that we feel like are missing in the audience, because there is a gap of people of age, mm-hmm. color, identity that are missing for theater for whatever reason.
Do you think it's financial?
Part of it's financial. Part of it's the story we're telling. Like, I mean, how many... It's like going to the theater. You have all this variety, and so I get to pick what I most likely want to see. Mm-hmm. But I have variety in that, and with film. I don't think there's much variety with theater.
You know, I forget that, but it's important. I hope that people who are listening who might not have funds to see work will dig into the ways to see theater on the cheap.
Yeah.
There are a lot of ways, if you contact the theater directly, to see theater for very little amounts. I know $5, $10, pay what you can nights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it takes a little bit of work. And I agree, there's so many people who aren't seeing
And
theater.
I think some of that has to be on the actual, because the one thing about film has, it has access to, like, everybody has a TV in their home. Mm-hmm. Theater doesn't work like that. It's also our responsibility, because the truth is, if you're saying, let's say they go to ART, but then they live all the way out in Grisham, you have to think about the transportation. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to think about, like, the social economic that's playing out. And we can't be like, hey guys, there's the resources of $5 arts for all, but then you can't get there really. Mm. Or you don't have access to, like, do a show that's, if it's not kid friendly, then you have to find, you know, there's like many variables that are layered on top of the fact that it's affordable. Mm. Is it something that then we have to decide as an art community that we need to go into these places that are probably not going to be able to travel out and see these, like, mm-hmm. bigger shows? Mm-hmm. When is it our responsibility to make sure we're providing for the people, the audience, so then they can begin to understand and see that there's this median that's not being focused on that they can still relate to?
Is Side-Eyed going to go out into the community now?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that your plan? Oh, great. That's wonderful.
Absolutely. I feel like it is our duty and it's our job to go to locations, to have shows that can be moving. Mm-hmm. So they're not in just one specific location. I mean, how hard is it to find parking in downtown? You know, mm-hmm. these are just like so many things that hinder us.
Not
so,
to mention childcare.
Childcare. Mm-hmm. Like, all these things keep us from, like, experiencing theater. But what is it if you decide to take your show and you put it in at a school and you make that work? How many people are you then touching and you're starting to, like, integrate? Because people can go to these kind of settings.
Mm-hmm. I think to answer your question, when you ask, is it financial, I'm going to say yes. because, and I agree with James where you say it starts with the higher up and then works your way down. It starts with your board. So it makes me a little nervous when somebody says that we don't even know who the board members are. You know what I mean? It makes me nervous because I have no way of contacting them. I'm all about grassroots. Like, mm-hmm. I'm all about knowing who the neighborhood people are. I'm all about knowing who I need to contact for certain things. I'm all about, because I do believe that, like, writing the senators or writing the people who are holding these platforms make a difference. And it makes me nervous when things aren't, like, advertised or not. I mean, which I get it. But it makes me nervous when things aren't available to the public, when it just feels like those are resources that could be had that aren't. Mm-hmm. And to, like, you know, piggyback off what Monica's saying here, it's like, I think it comes down to financials. Obviously, nobody is marketing Pay What You Will nights. It's all through word of mouth. Nobody's marketing Arts for All. Nobody's marketing like Industry Rush. You know, it's just like, oh, hey, by the way, you know, if you go to this theater on this certain night, you can, you know, pay $10 to get in to see this, you know, Lord theater show. And it's like, oh, word? Really? Okay, I'll go there Wednesday night. You know what I mean? And we got to stop that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, and like, I spend my days working with teenagers. So it's like, these teenagers are like, oh, I don't even know what the Portland Five are. And I'm like, what? You've lived here your entire life and you don't even know? You've never been to the Arlene Schnitzer? No. Have you ever been to a PCS show? No. But I really enjoy theater and I really like doing it, but it just seems so out of reach. And that is just like crazy to me because like it's right here within your grasp. But also I think it starts with finances, because if you look at your board, look who's running it. I mean, that's where your finances are coming from. So at the end of the day, theater is it's a business. You know, it's like, are we making this? What do our patrons want to see? Or our patrons want to see Oklahoma for the 25th time because they really liked it because Oklahoma brought in money. And it's like, great, but what else is Oklahoma bringing in? It's bringing in the same people, right? And then you have these meetings where the boards are like, are we marketing right? Are we like touching these communities that we got to touch? So it's like, it's kind of like an advantage because it's like, we know how to, we know, oh, were you in Oklahoma?
No, my bad. No.
I was like, did I just diss Oklahoma?
No, there's this, you know, there's stuff around Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, well, there's a reason I specifically said Oklahoma.
I worked at Portland Center Stage for 5 years. And the thing about it, I was a concierge at Portland Center Stage and they come up, it's like, oh my god, were you in Oklahoma? I was like, no.
I'm actually not the only black actor.
Yeah, it was an all black cast. It's an all black cast. Oh my god, the show was just, oh my god, it was so great. And I'm thinking to myself, because I'm a facilitator and I do social justice, so it's like I think about the sociology of it all. So just like, oh, okay, god, that was so great. Is it great to see black people telling a white narrative? You know, and when we think about where
it's familiar,
and like,
well, the thing
like,
that
I didn't know black folks could do that
when I first heard about the Oklahoma at PCS, I thought, okay, I thought, why? And then when I saw there was some historical backup to those,
I didn't even know. I just used Oklahoma as an example. So I'm scared that I'm right.
Well,
there was, they just do it last season.
They were doing
at Ashland. I guess Oklahoma's just the one that everyone wants to.
It just is.
And that's the problem. You find these, like, nobody, I'm in my opinion, I may be speaking kind of harsh here, but I don't want to see, like, a gender bend or, like, a different, or, like, a race switch or whatever they're calling it of, like, you know, a normal play, like a William Inge picnic type of thing or Oklahoma, you know what I mean? I think it's, like, this is where you're falling short. Just put on plays that are written by people of color, performed by people of color. That's how you're getting, don't stop putting on, oh my gosh, David Mamet plays or like, you know, things that like talk and skirt around the issue. If you want to see life that's depicted in a certain way, put it on by people who wrote it. Put it on by, like, you know, Liz Morgan, or put it on by, put on a Lynn Nottage play that hasn't been done yet because she's wrote a bunch.
There's so many.
Put on a Susan Laurie Park.
So many playwrights. It's like there's such a wealth of playwrights out here. There's kind of really no excuse of why you don't have different things on stage. And one thing like that really just, it's not only just the playwrights, but it's also, you have to think about the direction. Like, are you putting people in a direction that gets, that has a wider scope of things? Like, even with when they did, what was that? Help me out. Blanche. Oh gosh.
Oh, Streetcar Named Desire.
In my mind, as I'm sitting and I'm watching this show, I get that we have black people on stage. I'm like, okay, this is a different story. And it's in the South. So you have to think about all the dynamics that are playing, but you still told a straight linear story. Totally. You didn't describe, like, what if Blanche had been light-skinned and her sister had been dark-skinned? That's colorism within the black community that as I'm sitting in the audience, I can make a distinct connection. What I feel like is being missing that is, if you decide to tell stories of minorities, you're, and people, and like white people are deciding to like direct it, you need to have eyes that are appropriate so that you're not losing minorities sitting in the building, because we're like, oh, well, this is the same play. They just have like a black, brown person on the stage. You don't discuss the dynamics that play out in our lives. And that's what's missing. It's the little nuance and details that we go through every day that you can flesh out, but you can't flesh out if you don't know.
So that said, if you choose to do a play like that, how do you support that? Is it through like talk back? Is it through community building? Or do you just kind of say, no, don't do it anymore?
I think no to the, well,
I have distinct, this is Ayana speaking, so just I own my own stuff here. But I have a real hard time with talkbacks most of the time. I think it's important if people want to discuss the plays, they want that they have a space to do that. I do not believe that it's something that the actors need to be involved in. Mm. It is something that needs to be structured and set aside so that, you know, people can talk about it if they need to, you know, process what they've just seen. That needs to happen separate than from the performance.
Yeah, that's interesting.
As a facilitator,
go ahead.
No, I mean, I facilitate. Yeah. That's something I talked about. I did Spitting Into Butter at Bag and Baggage. I facilitate the talk back for that. It's a play on white privilege. I'm like, great. So I said, well, you know, if the actors want to be involved, I said, sure. I agree with that. I did Dutchman at Defunct. I was like, I don't want to talk to, I mean, I did the talk back because I wanted to. I love doing this work, but there's nothing worse than getting called the N-word all night or getting like stabbed and thrown off a train and then having someone talk. Well, how do you feel? And I'm like, I don't want to talk about, how do you feel? Like, I don't want to talk about my feelings. Don't hug me. Don't touch me. Don't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to have that conversation with people sometimes. But I mean, if you really think about it, outside of the talk back, I think it's really important for an organization to know why they're doing this work from the beginning.
Yes.
Like, why are we doing this work? Yeah. Why are we doing this casting? Mm-hmm. Why this direction? Why this audience? Why this, like, the why needs to go from start to finish.
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of places don't do that. And, you know, and back to my previous comment about, you know, social justice, like the arts were, I mean, no offense, they were made for white people. Mm-hmm. It was a white, it's a white dominated industry from the beginning. So if you really think about the sociology of it, where we are now with predominantly white boards, you're asking people who were not given a free pass to be a part of this industry to actually, oh, we want to hear your voice now. I'm like, why is that? Is it about money? Is it, you know, it is about money because a lot of these old white people are dying.
Right, we're hot topic. We're trending nobody's business.
And now we're saying, yes, we're here, but I'm not. I mean, how many people of color, how many of you played slaves before? I'm
a maid right now. Oh, I'm really a maid as we speak. Don't even get me started on that right now.
Right. Like,
as we speak.
I have not.
And you know, and the thing about it is, which brings it up, is that like as a young actor, I'm like, well, I kind of have to do this role because I need to like, A, practice and get better at my craft solely for me. And right. B, I need to be able to just like network and like meet people and so people can see me on stage. But it's like, at what cost? Mm-hmm. And then you're asking us to do these things, to play these roles, but then we have to show up every day with a smile on our face. Mm-hmm. We have to show every day committed. Mm-hmm. When you hear the N-word and you just expect me to be fully present, and that's unrealistic. You're even setting unrealistic expectations in the room for people of my minorities in general, because you want us to do these hard hitting plays, which they're not hard hitting because I live it every day. It's not hard for me. It really isn't. Coming in a room, it might be hard for white people in a room, but it ain't hard for me.
No.
You know, that's what's hard.
Yeah.
And you're just saying, hey guys, can you be present? And then it's then becomes, you're not being professional if you can't be present because you feel a certain type of way because you heard the N-word 10 times and you're just like shaking inside and you're upset. And then people are saying things that they don't even like, they're unaware that they're saying. And it's just affecting you all day, every day. You're doing a show 6-7 days a week. And then people are like, well, you need to be present. If you want a job, if you want a gig, you want to be professional, you have to be present.
And that's bull.
I do have to say that and Susanna and I were a part of a show last year this time where a lot of that dynamic in the room was not handled appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
It affected the entire cast. We almost did not do the show. It really set a tone and made us realize that no matter what show we do, that has to be established first in the room, right off the bat. Right off the bat. And that has been great to be able to process and go through these things and discuss, why are we doing this show? Mm-hmm. Is this relevant? Is this important enough? Or are we trying to pander to some unknown entity?
Well, there's so many fascinating pieces of it, because there's our work as artists, this mm-hmm. big picture, right? Mm-hmm. And then it goes way, way, way down to the personal. Yeah. And like what we experienced was our desire, and I think my hope for 2018, of course, is to actually be able to start to pull apart these things and actually be interested in knowing each other. Mm-hmm. Because what you, so many things you just said, I'm just like epiphany after epiphany mm-hmm. after epiphany, you know, and if someone is pained in rehearsal for whatever reason, needless to say, there's millions of reasons mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to take the time. We've experienced it over yeah. the summer
yeah.
Together in another show where something was said that was so insensitive and I couldn't believe it and I got a stomach ache and I'm like, I got to say something. And but just to it's all, it's messy, like we were saying.
It is.
There's like a fear too, I think there's safe to say, as a young artist, because it's like, here's the thing about myself. I will never go to those calls for any, like, that's just what, and like, I totally commend my fellow, like, actors and partners who, like, do go out to, like, you know, the calls to play maids or, you know, because I understand it, it's networking. But also with me saying I'm never going to do that or I refuse to do that, I know that I'm essentially hurting my career in a way. Like, I know that people aren't going to call me for certain things or that I'm actively, or like, they may get a bad taste in their mouth because I go, hey, I'm not going to come to this, but thank you for inviting me. And they're like, well, why? Do you think you're too good to come play this? And my answer to you is yes. Yeah. That's it. You know what I mean? And then I feel bad because I was like, I know that I may be hurting my career, but then it's also but to go into what you're saying, how you're like, oh, there's now a standard that we need to have, like, I feel like it hurts the younger artists to create that standard. I feel like that's where ageism plays in, because the older artists of color have been in this community longer. They've done more things. You've paid your dues. So people are like, oh, okay, Yanni, like, you've been here longer, or James, you know, so we'll listen to those standards. But when we walk into a room and we're like, these are the standards that we need to have, there's literally been directors being like, you just need to do your work. There's big people. There's yeah. literally been like, there's big people here, and you don't want word to get out that you are unprofessional. Yeah. And I think that is ridiculous, and I will table my acting career if I got to live through that, because it's called taking care of yeah. your mental health. Mm-hmm. It's not fair for people to sit there and endure that type of like trauma or endure that experience.
It's trauma. Yeah. You're asking us to relive trauma.
Yeah. And it's like, and when you have a young actor saying, listen, I'm being traumatized by this experience, and you're being told, hey, you just need to be a professional and you just need to do your work right now, that you're contributing to that trauma. You're saying that because she's a young actor and because she came in to do this, you're not allowed to set these standards for yourself, which is just basic human decency and basic human standards. Mm. And if that's what it is, I don't want to be an actor in this town. I don't care. Mm. Like, I really don't. I'm sorry. Like,
I want to address that, because it is so, I don't think that in my career, and I'm not to where I want to be mm-hmm. yet
yeah.
in my life, I would not be here had I not made those choices and stood up for myself mm-hmm. In my 20s.
Okay.
It is so important to do it. And there should never be a time when you allow somebody else to tell you that, ever. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you need to, you know, either go higher up above them and state your case, tell people why it's important that they listen to where you're coming from. If you do not get the support you need from them, you leave. And you go to another theater. You go somewhere that supports you, because we only need to support the yeah. companies that are going to hear their performers. Mm-hmm. You know, we are in collaboration. We are building this community, and it should be a place of inclusion. It should be a place of support. It should be a place where people are listened to. And it the arts are not to set somebody's huge thumb on other people.
Well, and I will say, you know, I experienced age discrimination this season. I'd never really experienced it so blatantly in the mm-hmm. past. And what spurred me on to action about it was a letter that I got from Kate Schindel, the president of Equity, Actors Equity Association. And I'll just quote, because I happen to have it in front of me. Everyone should be able to go to their job without being afraid that they will be sexually harassed or bullied. Mm-hmm. That isn't an unreasonable expectation. That's the law. End quote. Federal and state. Don't forget that there are H&R. Mm-hmm. There are people in companies in place, and all equity companies, at the very least, yeah. are having now being called to action to keep all of their policies about any type of discrimination on site able to be seen by all people participating. And just, I encourage anybody who's experiencing any type of bullying, that, which that sounds like bullying to me. What it's about is opening the doors to conversation right now. Yeah, it's messy, but you know, that's okay. Everyone has the right to have a safe workplace. It's the law.
Well, in social justice, we call that creating space. I mean, it's just like, why can't we talk? I'm telling you, if I've read a play, and I mean, the play that Monica's in right now, I had an opportunity to be a part of that, and I read probably 7 N-words in the first 15 pages, and I was doing Dutchman at the time, and I was like, I don't have it in me to.
You spent.
There's only so much, you know.
But 5 tokens, and you use all 5 of them for the year, and then you got to reload next year. Like, that's like how it right? is. You got to reload next year and just do it all over again and see
right.
where you want
to
go.
And I'm not too resistant to doing work like that as much. I'll read the play, and I'm like, okay, why are we doing this work? Why would I want? I make a decision about why I want to do it.
Yeah.
Why are they doing it? I show up. But if I go into the first read and we're not talking about this,
I'm out the door. People just going out the N-word, you're like,
I'm out the door, because, like, you know, people forget, like, it's an assimilation tactic. That's the power of words, the power of words and intention. These are real words.
Right.
I can hear it all day long. It's my job to process that. Mm-hmm. But when I'm getting paid the same amount of money as everybody else to get called the N-word all night, it's a lot. You know, like, can we talk about that?
Are you getting paid the same, though?
So as actors who've been around for a little while and have, like, put you, like, firmly have both feet in the water, do you guys feel like when you first started out acting, like I'm just asking as myself, like, did you have these encounters where you were like, I don't know if I can say something. I'm, like, in this room right now. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, yes, like, let's stand up for ourselves. And that's what I'm dealing with, where it's like, yes, I'm refusing all this, but it's like, but I'm trying to be a livelihood actor. Like, I'm trying to make sure my bills get paid too.
Right.
And I'm trying to make sure that I make connections and I build the resume. So it's like, did you guys have that experience when you were younger? Like,
Well, I'm going to bust it out. What a lot of people don't know about me, you may not know, is I've only been acting for 4 years. I'm 37 years old. I just started my acting career 4 years ago. And I worked at Portland Center Stage as an employee. And I think I saw Rodney Hicks in The Mountaintop. It was amazing. And I was like, wow. And I remember looking up at him and saying, like, is that what it's like? You know, where I'm looking up at this man who looks like me doing this thing, this revolutionary thing. And I started acting, and then next, you know, I did a kid show one day, and I was the guy. And I went to Tigard High School, and there were like 5,000 white kids, and there was one little black kid in there, and he was just bawling, and he looked at me, and he was crying because he said I was a favorite. I mean, like, I could tell him looking at me was what did it for him. And that's what I'm talking about, like, being present, creating space, being, that's why I do the work that I do, to be honest. And it was hard. Because, I mean, Showboat was my first show. I've done Showboat twice in this town.
Sorry.
Twice.
That's another story.
And I was thankful for
it's another story.
We did that work together.
Should we do that play? Should that play be done?
Exactly right.
I was happy to be a part of it, even though I went through some leaps and bounds, because I learned a lot about myself and a lot about what work. I think it's really important at this point to establish what type of work you want to do.
Yeah, that's true.
And I try to be humble, and I try to be respectful, because I think every organization has the right to do whatever shows they want to do.
Yeah, I agree.
But I can say that I choose not to participate in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I choose to write this narrative.
And it's really funny, because when we do things of, like, diversity, or we do inclusiveness, these stories are, like, labeled gripping, or, like, like, what are some of the words? Gripping, raw, gritty. Yeah. And it's like, why is another narrative these things? Why are we labeling?
Oh, that's interesting.
It's the, like, PR machine, which is very separate from the production machine, is what I've come across, because that's part of the getting the established theater goers engaged to come and
it's
see.
It's kind of like you're like living on adrenaline, like you're like, oh, I'm about to go see this show. It's just like all, like, queer people, and it's gripping. You're like, okay, but you go to work every day and you work with queer people, and you're not this gripping, and it's not this raw. You're just like, and you're, it's like you're kind of, you're like, kind of, if you just want to be like, you're kind of like Venus Hot Top me and put me on thing and be like, see, look at this, guys, you've never seen it before, action, let's go. And it's like, that's, guys, you live this every day, we do this every day, and you encounter people every day, and they're not gripping. I mean, theater is gripping, but why is this specific story of minorities supposed to be like this roller coaster, like, just because what you then do, you remove some of the audience members. You remove them away from being like, oh, this is definitely not my life. I don't deal with this on a daily basis, but you do. you contribute to it every day. And so when do we start changing the choices of wordings that we begin to use? When does it start becoming ordinary to see these minorities on stage?
You're so right, because that really contributes to the divisiveness, which very sadly, I think that the administration, current administration, mm-hmm. is trying to engender is a huge chasm between us. Mm-hmm. And that just really contributes to it. I never thought of that.
And whose story are we telling? And honestly, in a town like Portland, we have predominantly white audiences. Like,
yeah.
Most plays that deal with the black struggle, like anyone's oppression, it's usually about their awareness, not ours. Mm-hmm. You don't have Amen. To teach. We need more black people here.
Teaching.
It's like, sorry, like, I don't, honestly, I'm not, I don't need to see To Kill a Mockingbird. I know all about that.
It's the difference.
You know, like, there's no, like, I don't need to see, I don't need that. It's not for
me. I live
me.
It.
You know, I live it every day. You
it's
know?
Like the difference between A Raisin in the Sun and then Clybourne Park. It's like A Raisin in the Sun doesn't need to talk about it as much. You just need to live the experience and the audience sees for themselves. Where then like Clybourne Park, which I like both plays. Like, it's nothing me, you know. But like Clybourne Park is like, you got a bunch of people talking about it. Like in a living room for two acts.
Right. So I mean, for 2018, I want to see a celebration of blackness. I want to see a celebration of what it means to be queer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm black and queer, like, you know, not black and gay, black and queer. No one knows how that unravels, but I would love to be able to talk about that and create space for that.
And you're doing it.
Well, I'm doing two trains running at Passing Art coming up here pretty soon. And I'll be honest, I'll say it on the podcast. Like, one of the things that makes me really nervous is I've never been in an all black cast before.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
And when, as a black male, when I walk in that environment, I'm a black male who happens to be queer. And sometimes that sense of homophobia, what I call black homophobia, is something mm-hmm. that gives me fear and trepidation as an artist. And I would love to be in an environment where I don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's on them, but that's something we deal with across the board. Or
that's what
I'm
being told. Like, how you feel and like that. That's not even a story I'm seeing on stage within like that part of that community.
No.
And that's what I'm saying. That's it's lack of awareness. And like, these are things that if you want to just really talk about bringing stuff to light in theater being a movement, there are things within a very small culture and group that's not being explored, that we never discuss because we're discussing the same thing every day. Which is like white guilt and white privilege. And it's like, can we move from that?
Can we
move from
that?
So we can start
doing
some things. Yeah, you know what I mean? So we can explore what's within our own stuff going on.
And it is on us. You know what I mean? Like, you said it's not on them, but it is on us. Because if it's not, like, each generation keeps going, well, you know, like, we got to stop being so passive about it.
Change the culture.
Like, yeah, because if it's not on us, then who's it going to be? Like, we got to start telling these stories. Or, like, I mean, I feel like generations have started telling these stories, but we really just got to blow them up. Like, they just got to be, like, it can't be a trend. It's just got to be an integral part of what performance and visual art is.
Well, and I'd like to just see stories about people who are just interacting, and just the nature of who they are dictate, you know, where they're coming from and the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a huge label over each person's head.
Yes. Right.
And that's really frustrating for me. And, you know, I'm trying to keep my eyes open. I know that through the theater that, you know, we work with a lot, that which is Artist Rep, we're trying, you know, new plays, we're trying, we're going out, we're finding new playwrights, we're trying to find stories.
You know, I think for me, what keeps coming up is this ability for all of us to be really brave and make mistakes, and to ask forgiveness, learn, charge ourselves with learning how to be with each other better, and it's going to be messy.
Well, and the political climate also. I mean, how much room do you have to fail and to learn a lesson and move forward? You know, I feel like there's not room to fail right
now.
Depending
on who you are. I would say it depends on who you are. I feel like there's more options to fail if you are not a minority. I feel like that, you know, white people have a thing where it's like, okay, get back up, you can do it. But we don't all have that option to get back up and do it. It's kind of like we got to nail it the first time so you know we can do it and we can be strong and we can knock it out the park so that you can like, be okay, they're reliable. We don't all have the option to be like, we failed.
Yeah.
That's for me, that's unrealistic to say like, my failure feels 15 times harder than my white counterpart's failure.
I almost feel the opposite in Portland, and not in a good way. I feel like the failure is expected from minorities.
Wow.
And I feel like the failure, not seen as failure, just seen as, well, of course they don't have the capability to produce.
No, I feel that.
That like has been something.
Yeah. And on the other end, what I'm saying is then we start creating that own anxiety within us. So then we don't allow ourselves to fail.
Yeah, of course.
It's kind of like, of course you expect me not to make it. Yeah. Then I got to work 50 times harder to make it.
And then the pressure is just like through the roof.
And so like, I mean, I had a teacher literally tell me, like, he gave me a note for my strength to be more like his white girlfriend. He gave me a note. He was giving me a note in a particular scene, and he prefaced it and he guided me through with the strength of his white girlfriend. And I was like, "You're telling me as I speak and look at you that I
Yikes.
Okay?
What a time!
So you know, it's
so
like,
here's my question: like, did you say something about it?
Yes,
you did. So exactly.
I get two words. I have a sentence. I'm a black woman in America. That sums it up for people. When you say that, I'm like, I'm black woman in America. It don't get no harder, honey. Like, I mean, in other people's sentences, it might, but for my own personal thing, that's a struggle within itself. And that's all I need to say to you. Another thing is, I'm tired of feeling like I have to sit and explain it. Cause then if people want to sit down and be like, okay, teach me. And you're like, God, you know.
Nobody has the patience and the time.
Yeah, no. And it's like, and then it's like, on one end, it's like, yeah, we're all for like educating and feeling like that. But then at what point do we stop having to teach? Cause like, it gets tiring. I teach at work. I teach in a theater. Mm-hmm. And not teaching like young kids how to do it. Like young kids are teaching young kids how to like interact with them. And
so
that's exhausting.
How do those interactions, like in a dream world, right? 2018, how would that interaction come full in a good, positive way? Like someone makes a mistake, says something dumb.
Well, you know, I have a saying, it's like when people say that they're oppressed, believe them, mm-hmm. you know? And that can come in many different ways. Like, well, how is that offensive? I was like, that wasn't the right response.
Right. Yeah, that's the first one.
The right response is, oh, my apologies, what would you prefer? Or like, you know,
it's pretty
Google,
dang
we've
simple.
Got, it's yeah. I think it's really simple.
That's
I mean,
cool
it's just like,
to know.
And
you know,
we're not just talking about race with the Me Too movement and all the sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. How do you respond?
I think the best response is don't respond, listen. Just listen to the stories, like to get on the sexual harassment thing. My biggest thing, when all that stuff came out about Bill Cosby, I literally sat down for half my day and read each woman's story because I was like, all they wanted was somebody to listen. And it took a comedian who was a male to make a joke for people to be like, oh, I think Bill Cosby has been sexually harassing these women. Mm-hmm. For these women to be like, oh, now you finally want to listen to us. Like when the whole thing about Harvey Weinstein, I did the same thing. I sat down. And I read Ashley Judd's and Rose McGowan's and like the secretaries and Lupita's story. I read all of them. Mm-hmm. It's like, it comes down to, I feel the biggest thing is when we have these encounters, you go, well, you know, when I was younger, I experienced, just stop talking. Just listen.
Yeah.
Just listen.
Everybody wants to talk about their story. And you're like, in this moment, we just need you to listen.
Just listen. And go ahead.
Another layer to that. I mean, like, I'm in my late 30s, but like, I watch Bill Cosby all the time. Like, for me, it was just like.
That was a dicey one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just like, Bill Cosby's one of our heroes.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, was. Like,
and again,
I'll say it out loud. He was.
And like, another messy deal where you're like, guess what, people? Human beings are multifaceted. We make mistakes. People do ugly things. We're all capable of ugly things. And we're all capable of forgiveness and communication. So it's a pipe dream to think. I mean, every person who's come forward with some of these recent accusations are just, they're sickening and horrible acts of violence and crimes.
I don't know what to say.
Well, and again, so many things are allegations. We don't know. It's all coming so fast. But we're kind of veering into some major territory. Did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I think that moving forward, this is where we're coming from, right? We're coming from this place of hopefully more courage, hopefully more open, receptive, and that's being counterbalanced by this very closed, censored, this reactionary element, right? that feels like they've given enough. They feel like they've heard enough. They feel like mm-hmm. they just want things to return to a status quo where everybody just gets back to their place and does their thing. Mm-hmm. They just feel comfortable. And I feel like that's what we're going into as an entire country mm-hmm. and probably globally in 2018 and beyond. And I'm really interested to hear what you ladies have planned for Side Eyes and how you're moving forward. If you're talking about new stories, if you're talking about collaborations, where are those stories coming from? Who are you collaborating with? And, you know, how does that set an example for how we're moving forward?
I hate to say this, but we have got to wrap it up.
Oh, we are out of time.
I mean, we are. Wow, this conversation was so fascinating, and I cannot thank you enough. Now, that is a really awesome question, and we can come back. Like, well, you had talked about a particular place.
The Clark doll, just really brief, I found it during my PAC adventures and wanted to do it as a scene, but we were unable to because it recalls for 3 Black women. We only had 2. Mm-hmm. So that had to wait. And it just kept being in my mind. I'm like, the story is just genuinely about 3 Black women who are on a wide spectrum, who not only does it talk about external oppression, but it talks about how we manifest that inside and then how we start oppressing each other. Mm. And it's a beautiful piece. It's with ritual and mask, and the ladies are exploring like not only their identity, but like where they fall within their own Blackness and
internalized
internalized oppression. So like it's a beautiful piece.
The Clark doll.
It's called The Clark Doll by Liz Morgan. She's a New York playwright.
It shares the title of the 1960 Clark Doll experiment.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes.
I don't know
that it was also recreated in 2000.
The experiment is basically when the scientists went up, they asked what dolls to Black and white children, what dolls they preferred. And unanimously, everybody always preferred the white doll, even Black children. Mm-hmm. And they did it recently, and it still holds the same.
My goodness.
Really quick, just want to live off. Like, that was just students looking and trying to find a scene for a class. There's no excuse for like bigger theaters not being able to reach out to people and be like, and I was like, hey, there's a play I want to look at. She was like, oh, and you're looking for this? What do you need? Oh, these are the things you need? I have a perfect play for you. And the willingness for a playwright to be like, I see you, I see where you're trying to go. Let me drop this on for you and you should read it. And that's just students.
Yeah. Just to end on a more positive note, I mean, we're not the first company or theater collaboration where we're calling ourselves to be doing this. There's other theaters in town. There's Theater Diaspora.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, there's Confrontation Theater.
Pass and
there's
Art.
Pass and Art. Mm-hmm. August Wilson Red Door Project. Uh-huh. I mean, all of these. Milagro. All of these theaters.
Independent, like smaller. Yeah. They're not in theaters. They're just independent people producing work. They're people doing it.
They're all doing this work. You know what I mean? Samson would kill me if I was like, didn't say something about theater. But, you know, you got Samson, D-May, and Kevin Jones. You got people that have been here. Passing Art's been around for, you know, it's reaching the new people. It's reaching the new works. And that's the one thing that we're trying to do is like, everything needs to be homegrown, grassroots. It's new. It's new. It's new. We need it to be new. We need it to be fresh. That's just what's got to happen, I think.
Well, it's a perfect way to end it. Let's be new and fresh in 2018.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I hope you guys will all come back and talk more.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Yeah.